Welcome to the Daily Flow. Please welcome your host, John Coleman.
David Dixon. Thank you very much for joining us on the Daily Flow today. I'll just read out the narrative that we're going to talk about today. I'm not supposed to narrative is the wrong word, but the kind of description really. Intent and impulse. So why do we do what we do? What is the narrative that sits behind our actions? Understanding the difference between these two terms and their true meaning is a process of reflection and exploration. Two of the fundamentals of personal and professional development. David, would you mind introducing yourself and then explaining to the audience why you'd like to talk about this topic today?
Well, hi, yeah. Thanks very much for having us here today, John. My name's David Nixon. I am a writer, performer, presenter, and I also train people in presentation skills and developing narratives and developing stories. If you know me, you'll know that I am also a self-proclaimed chaos engineer, which is a title I've bestowed upon myself because, well, it's been a pretty colourful life. I seem to be making sense of it at last. The subject for this, the title for this, Intent and Impulse, actually comes from a conversation that myself and my partner have quite frequently. She is a holistic therapist, and a question that she often asks is, what sits behind? Catherine's favorite question is, what sits behind that? What's informing that? What's the intent or impulse behind that? As someone who's concerned with language, I started thinking, well, what's the difference between intent and impulse? You know, what are their actual roots? Where do they come from? What's the etymology of those things, and how can they inform our behavior? And to that end, I wrote a little article today entitled Intent and Impulse, just exploring that a little bit. So I thought what I'd do today is share some of those insights with you and perhaps come to some conclusions about how we can benefit from exploring the intent and the impulse behind our behavior and the decisions we make. Okay, let's start with intent. Intent is a really interesting word. It's a medieval French word, entente, which originally means, now let me drag this out from memory, to push, to have a set goal, to push towards a set goal. But it comes from the Latin intentus, which means to stretch out, to put tension into something. So this really interested me. When it comes to intent, we're talking about a certain tension. So then I asked myself the question, well, what's that intention between, the tension within that intent? Is perhaps between what we want to happen and where we are now. It's a very mindful thing, intent. It's very deliberate. It's calculated, not necessarily in the Machiavellian sense of the word, but there's a forethought to it. Where are we now and where do we want to get to? And the tension between that is the intent that informs our actions. What lies behind what we do. Then we come to the word impulse. Impulse perhaps has some negative connotations to it. Impulsive behavior is often seen as, you know, possibly erratic or dangerous, you know, not planned. But impulsive can be kind of playful, creative. It's not necessarily a negative word. Impulse comes from it's an old sort of 15th, 16th century word, meaning to impel, having the properties of something that impels, pushes forward. It has a really dynamic quality to it. It's an action word. Intent is a kind of thinking word. Impulse is a kind of action word. When we start looking at these things together, look at the tension within the word intent, the intention behind something, that tension that's there, and we think about the impulse, which is the release of that tension. This spoke really, really quite significantly to me as someone with a performance background in the performing arts, and you know, certainly specifically in comedy, we talk about tension and release. And this gives us a sense of timing and rhythm and tempo and punchline and these things that give texture to what we do. So I started thinking about your daily flow from yesterday, John, when you were talking about turning the tap off. And I mean, a podcast called The Daily Flow, and you're talking about turning the tap off. I found I thought that was quite a lovely irony to that. But in that, you talked about, you know, it's not enough just to take a couple of days away. You need to take 6 to 8 weeks. You know, we're talking weeks. Take your foot off the gas for a significant amount of time. And I, in my mind, I was going through the counter arguments to that. Well, I've got to put food on the table, and like the world doesn't stop turning just because I'm taking time out. And I started thinking about, well, what is your intention? If you're going to take the foot off the gas, if you're going to turn the tap off, what is your intention? Is your intention to genuinely take time out and engage in a place of stillness where thoughts and feelings can emerge and be dealt with and managed accordingly? Or is your intention simply to have some time out so that you can come back strong and come back fighting and build up a whole new load of stress levels? Depending on what your intention is, your impulse will be different. And then I started relating this to the situation we're in at the moment. We're in this very curious liminal space at the moment around COVID, around lockdown, around even around, you know, things like sustainability. People are asking a lot of questions. Sometimes they're not necessarily asking the right questions, but it's good that people are asking questions. But let's look at COVID specifically. We've just been through a collective trauma. We've just been through a global trauma. So we need to think about what is informing our behavior coming out of that. What is the intention behind our behavior moving forward? Is the intention just to express the trauma that we've just experienced, or is our intention to address those feelings and manage them accordingly and overcome them and move forward in a productive way? And depending on the intent, our impulses will be different. I think it's really important at this point in the 21st century for people to, as you say, turn the tap off, take stock, and with the right intent, explore what we've just been through individually and collectively so that we can make the right decisions moving forwards to build sustainability, to build meaning into people's activity, to address many of the issues. Behind that sits these two values of impulse and intent. What sits behind the decisions that we're making now? Are we just looking short term, or are we looking long term? So impulse and intent to me are two kind of markers, two kind of anchors that we can look at, we can explore, we can reflect on, and make progress with our own professional and personal development. That's the crux of it, if you like.
So put the Spanish flu, right? After the Spanish flu, after World War One, people kind of came out and there was a kind of risk, almost like the embracing of risk, really. People took a lot of financial risk, and then we kind of all know what happened in 1929, all that kind of thing. And there's already people writing, like, for the big newspapers about, you know, people likely to kind of go a little bit kind of crazy when the shackles are released. And there's kind of two questions, really, like, will we go nuts? and the second one is, even if we don't go nuts, are we just going to carry on the way we did? Are we going to kind of just step back for a moment and just reflect on just what happened, and almost like a retrospective on the year, really, the year and a half, or however long it's been, to kind of figure out where to go next? And for that, you do need headspace. You need to be not like a hamster on a wheel, kind of just doing the next thing. What are your thoughts on that, David?
These are important factors to explore, these important things to look at. One word that pops into my mind is collaboration. We can't do this on our own. It's all very, you know, I'm an individual, I'm sat here kind of extolling the virtues of exploring the intent and impulses behind what we do, but this has come from a conversation that I've had with other people. These are not problems that can be solved individually. These are problems and these are challenges that we have to face together So I think the first port of call is building networks, building groups that share those values and can take those values to a wider audience as well. You know, we're all familiar with the concept of if you have a network of 50 people, then you've got a network of 500 people. We're all familiar with that concept. Mm-hmm. So if we can be aligning our networks along these values of being mindful about how we move forward and not making those mistakes. And sure, there's going to be a lot of fallout. I'm not expecting the whole population of the earth to suddenly sit down and start meditating on these things. That's not going to happen. And there will be, you know, there are going to be some train wrecks. Absolutely. That's life. It happens. But if we can develop some kind of collaboration of mindful action around what are our intentions now? What are our purposes now? Let's have some clarity of intent. And let's have some values of in the impulses that drive that intent forward. So I think collaboration is one thing. I've just mentioned clarity of intent. I think that's absolutely key. Without that clarity of intent towards a sustainable economy, towards a less self-destructive society, there has to be clarity of intent. Shared values and shared meaning.
Yeah.
And that involves a certain amount of cultural literacy as well.
Absolutely. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that? So how would you, I mean, we've really got used to geographically dispersed teams, and I think they're going to be even more geographically dispersed as a result of people learning how to work remotely and so on, which kind of brings in your point about that geodiversity, if you like, cultural diversity. Do you have any suggestions on how people can navigate that?
Okay, so first of all, I don't claim to be an expert on cultural diversity. I've been involved with frameworks and developmental processes, and that's why it's up on my agenda.
Yeah.
So please don't hold me to account. But I do have opinions on that. I have worked from 2009 to 2015. I worked with a global development team on a model for occupational therapy called the Cower model, which was heralded as a framework for a culturally responsive practice. Okay. The reason why it was culturally responsive is because it used a metaphor to develop a shared language. So rather than imposing a narrative upon the client developed their own narrative and their own language around that. But within that, what we find is a definition for culture, which I think is really important. The Cower model defines culture as spheres of shared lived experience placed in space and time. So rather than culture being perceived as this kind of linear, hereditary thing, which takes place purely as an ethnocentric kind of phenomenon, the Cower model sees culture as shared experiences in space and time. So we share a culture of podcasting, let's say. You're from a different geographical location, but we share this thing in common, for example. That's something that we can connect on. There'll be plenty of diversity within our cultures. I'm from England, you're from Ireland, so there's lots of diversity there. I think the key here is looking for those points of connection. Yeah, you know, seek out those points of connection. Respect the points of diversity. Yeah, and what narrative emerges from that will have real value.
And does the intent come out when you do that?
Well, I think the intent there is to seek out those points of connection, because I think there is an impulse to seek out points of difference. We live in this, I wrote a blog quite a while ago now called Verses, Verses, Verses. What I was flagging up was that little VS abbreviation in between reductionist versus holistic, this versus that, male versus female. And actually the real issue in those kinds of framings is that little VS abbreviation in the middle. That's causing a lot of problems. Why are we pitching one thing against the other? There's an impulse to look for the divisive.
Yeah, false dichotomy.
There needs to be an intent to look for the connective. And respect those points of division Of course, and you know, there's an ethics to that. If those points of division are creating conflict, or there must be some ethical values applied to that. So I'm talking very broadly here. But yeah, if our intent can be to seek out those points of connection, resist the impulse for that sense of division, and collaborate on those terms with clear intent for what kind of future we want to see, then, you know, perhaps that's a way of using reflections on intent and impulse to actually have some clarity on a collective scale. Because as I said, we don't do this on our own.
So if intent is about where we're going and why we're going there, and I can see how the Kawa model facilitator well can help you to get to that, could you also maybe sort or triage the impulses that maybe help us to achieve that intent? Like, are all impulses bad, really? You know, the point you're kind of making, right?
No, it's about what has value. I think sometimes we stifle our impulses because of sort of, you know, social conditioning and social norms. And do I want to paint my face blue and run around a field and kind of scream Yahoo? If I might have an impulse to do that, but I might resist that impulse because it's socially unacceptable, or I feel very kind of, I mean, that's an extreme example, but you know, and I'm being a little bit flippant there, but we stifle our impulses and they kind of pop up elsewhere. So perhaps we should be looking at the intent behind those impulses. Yeah. If I want to paint my face blue and run around in a field shouting Yahoo, if the intent behind that is to release some sort of anxiety, then that's a good intent. My impulse might be to be incredibly polite and charming, and the intent behind that could be quite malevolent. So we have to check ourselves, you know, what sits behind what it is we're looking to achieve, and what sits behind that? You know, what is your business about? Is your business purely about wealth accumulation? Okay, fair enough. If it is, what sits behind the intent accumulating that wealth? Do you think that will find you happiness? Right, so you're looking for happiness. What sits behind that? So we can look deeper and deeper and deeper into what the causal factors are behind our behavior in a very simple way, and perhaps make clearer decisions which have a greater collaborative and collective impact, which I believe is, that's the kind of world I want to be living in.
And we talked before on another podcast, Exigility, about storytelling. And you mentioned, this maybe ties in with intent a little bit as well, because if you can articulate the intent with some kind of story, Henrik Niebuhr is famous for his videos, isn't he? His agile videos. Very clear communications, doodle videos, so on and so forth, or cartoon stories, I think you mentioned before when I was talking to you. So when you're kind of doing this for yourself, and when you turn your own tap off, as you mentioned in your article, do you lean on those tools actually to help you with intent?
Yes.
Yeah. That's an example of a closed question. Not a good question to ask.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm working on, okay, for example, 3 years ago, I had a head injury, which caused all sorts of horrible disruptions in my life. And the therapist that I worked with to help me through that period, we established that we had a shared interest in poetry. So I've been writing and performing poetry for quite a lot of my adult life. We used poetry to create a language that I could express certain experiences through. I've since extended that and created a whole little sort of fictional world that I can dip into and explore my own processes through characterization, through interactions and relationships and actions, so on. So yeah, I do use stories. I use stories in a very, very complex way to explore my own behaviors and explore also how those behaviors are impacting on other people. So yeah, stories, really, we all use stories, not always consciously, and maybe that's the point. Can we be more conscious about the way we use story to make better use of it?
Yeah, I was talking to Marty Kagan last week and just went live in Exit Jersey podcast about 40 minutes ago, and he was talking about the written narrative. Any time that he would prepare a talk or some kind of business case or whatever it was, he would prepare a paper that would have to basically stand on its own, that it wouldn't have David with his fancy PowerPoint skills and storytelling skills to get through, that the written narrative would actually have to do the job itself, if that makes sense. And he does that for his blog posts as well. He gets people to double check them before they go out and so on. So I think narrative is crucial, and actually having your story well thought through, covering all the angles, and trying to make it evidence-based as well, where evidence can be brought in. But a lot of the time, I guess, intent is about hope, isn't it? It's about something you want to achieve. We just mightn't have the data yet to tell us whether we need to do that. And then I guess we need to manage those impulses as we go along and, you know, almost check in with ourselves. Are we still aligned with our intent here, or have we actually discovered that our intent was wrong?
We should
chase that shiny ball, you know.
Intent is about hope, but it's also about the energy with which we hold on to that hope, the way that we hold on to that hope, that vision for the future. You know, how do we do that? How do we hold on to that tension? Is it, you know, is that healthy? This comes back to your turning the tap off. You know, if the tension within the intent is too aggressive, then we're going to suffer. And when we suffer, we make bad decisions and we act out, you know, scripty behavior, and we enter into stress behaviors. So our intent needs to be kind of gently held, you know, hold your intention gently. And that way your impulses and your actions will have a value that's more related to that clear intent. As soon as we start gripping too tight, you know, it's like sort of sand coming running through your fingers. You know, you can't, if you've ever tried to grip sand, it just kind of comes out, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, David, for coming on the show. I'd love to talk to you again about other interesting topics like this. It's really nice to talk about these kind of things.
Thanks very much, John.
Thank you, everyone.
Got a question for us? Leave a voice message at anchor.fm/dailyflow/message, and we'll feature it as well as provide you with an answer.